Okay, so we've all had that moment where we've been in a garden center and picked up a plant or had a friend give us a unlabeled cutting of a plant and look at it and think, what the heck is this thing? I have no idea of this plant's name. I mean, that was me in the garden center literally last week. And today's episode is all about that moment and learning some basic skills for identifying houseplants and how to observe our plants in order to get to know them better. So, plant friends, welcome to episode 116 of Bloom and Grow Radio. Hey, plant friends. I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks. I am super excited to welcome Derek of The Crazy Botanist, our newest botanist to the mix of Bloom and Grow guests for a higher level conversation about the basics of houseplant identification and how to change our thinking around plants to see them for their leaf shapes, their flowers, and other identifying factors instead of just a name. Sometimes you got to zoom out a little bit. You know what I mean? This episode is a really nice palate cleanser that I feel like sometimes we get focused on the nitty-gritty of plant science deep dives, which you all know I'm obsessed with, but this is a really nice kind of zoom out moment for us to start thinking about our plants and the way they grow, and I hope you enjoy it. Oh my goodness, we've had such an impressive influx of Patreon plant friend supporters over the last month. So welcome to the club, Nancy Ross, Samantha Ryder, Laura Pugh, Hai-Yin Shim, Megan Lowe, and Misty Siochi. Oh my goodness gracious, thank you, our newest Patreon plant friends. These fantastic humans, in addition to a whole bunch of humans across the globe, help Bloom and Grow monetarily on a monthly basis for as little as a cup of fancy coffee. If you are interested in supporting Bloom and Grow and helping me bring these episodes and content to as many planty ears as humanly possible, you can check the link in the show notes for more info. All right, plant friends, this episode was particularly interesting to me as I am starting to slowly grow my collection again and finding myself in nurseries a lot, looking at plants being like, what the heck is this? So let's dive in. Here's Derek. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Derek, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hey, Maria. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to have you on for so many reasons.
I'm excited to be here.
Yes! I followed you for a while, and I'm excited to just finally talk to you, but I'm also excited to talk about this topic because, man, I had so many listeners reach out with questions for you. I think this is a confusing topic. I think it's a super empowering topic once people are armed with this knowledge you're going to share with us. So I am so excited to nerd out with you today.
Let's do it. I am stoked.
So before we nerd out, why don't you tell us, who is Derek, the plant parent, and how did you become the crazy botanist / the chocolate botanist?
How did I become? It's a very long journey and some would say a delicious journey. I have always had an affinity for plant life. And when it comes to dealing with the natural world, I was just drawn to them, like 4, 5 years old, even 3. Like, I just remember being fascinated with dandelions and grasses and hedges and sedges and all of that jazz. So once I got to the point of like looking for a career and a degree, botany came up and I was like, oh, that's this thing that references the obsession I have with plants, the relationship I have with plants. So I became that person, and through a series of conversations, attempts to help people, and learning opportunities that I had to go through, the name Crazy Botanist came up, and someone told me I should be marketing that and doing something with that. And here we go. Here I am.
So you have your degree in botany, and by day, what do you do by day with your botany degree?
So I work at a company called Medicago USA. We use tobacco to produce vaccine. So that is my day job. I've been there almost 7 years now. It's a pretty chill place. We're doing some great work. Like, it's really good work.
That's amazing. So you're playing with plants all day.
It is phenomenal. Plants, environment, technology, and seeing so much science. So much science I never would have thought I would be a part of.
Man, that's so cool. And then you've got your Instagram account and brand and soon to be YouTube channel where you're help educating and bringing science to more people like us.
Like us, indeed. That is correct.
That's awesome. Well, we're diving into plant identification, which I think I've definitely seen as some courses that I've been looking into taking in. But what I really want to know is houseplant identification. Plant identification, I feel like, gets really broad and really intimidating. And as plant parents, we're really interested in understanding the difference between a monstera and a peperomia and a philodendron. So before we dive into that, can we zoom out for a minute and talk about how plants are classified?
We sure can. So I think when we think of classification and we think of plant ID, it can be a lot, because quiet as it's kept, I hate plant ID, but I love it because it is amazing how every characteristic, whether a plant has a hairy stem or the stem is not hairy, or the color of the pollen, all of these other different factors that we would never even really think of all blend together to make this profile of a plant. It is simply phenomenal. So when we're thinking of classifying an organism, we're thinking of what's called taxonomy, right? And pretty much this is an awesome way that we classify or name organisms. So it was founded by Carl Linnaeus, who was a very influential scientist that had a really racist past, but that's a whole nother story. And he made this thing called binomial nomenclature. So binomial nomenclature can be a mouthful.
Say that 10 times fast. So
I know, I'm trying to say it once slow. It's coming through a little rough. Is basically like the first and last name of a species. We have this series of twists and turns, almost like GPS, that we use to really zoom into what a species is. And again, those are different categories that are from a big list, again, looking at like from Earth to a smaller list to the smallest, looking at this is the city that you're in. And again, when you think about it like that, like a location versus a series of Latin words and names, it starts to make more sense. So again, this is a beautiful thing we use. It goes from domains to kingdoms, kingdoms to phylum, phylum to class, order, family, genus, and species. Again, species is the smallest. So pretty much.
That's such an interesting comparison. So you're looking at the taxonomy classes as a location being kingdom. Wait, what's the first one?
The first one is domain.
So domain and kingdom is like the large continents, chunking it down to species, which is like someone's house, like someone's specific address. Oh, that's so cool. I've never heard about it used that way or described that way.
That's good. When I be sitting here thinking and taking notes, a lot of things hit me. So science, I will explain in a lot of different ways. So when you, again, when you think about it like that, you're really getting a good view of what we're talking about. So when we're talking about a plant that is an aloe vera, that is the most specific phrasing you could use. Yes, you can put, you know, variety XYZ and any type of names. You could probably breed a bunch of plants and put numbers to them. But the most specific thing you could do is this is an aloe vera plant. And then when you're zooming out to its domain, again, that biggest thing, that is the eukaryote domain, eukaryota or eukarya. So when you're coming to that, it's, again, this gigantic arena. But as far as us people are concerned who are looking at houseplants or plants and fungi in general, you are looking at that species and maybe the family to say, where is their relation? Where are their similarities? Where are their differences? And how can I really understand what's going on in this grouping, in this history, really, of this species?
So we've got this hierarchy, domain, kingdom, then phylum.
Phylum,
Then
class.
So plants are all under the same one there. So we're not really getting fancy yet. Then what's under class?
We got order.
Order, all still under one order, right?
Well, they can be spread under different classes and different orders and even different phylums. So the vascular plants versus the non-vascular plants. Vascular plants, plants that are on the earth, that are typically walking around, that have some sort of woody or herbaceous thing going on, versus like algae that are not vascular. There can be all of those different areas in the orders. There can be different orders that relate to, again, these different, again, still large chunks, smaller than domain, but a still sizable chunk of plant before we even get to the family. And that's where we start to really say, this is something that your farmer, your agriculturalist, or even your plant person is familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. And then people will usually know a genus because, again, that's what they put on the labels, especially when you go to the store.
Right. So the areas that we're really messing with understanding today are more like species, genus, and family, right? Is that that's where exactly the house plants start to kind of change more? And that's where like the classifications kind of break off a little bit more?
Well, yeah, because when you're doing a general idea of a plant, if you were out in the wild where these plants are and you're looking at a key, the series of, again, identifiers or characteristics that lead you to a plant, then it'll generally say, okay, if it is, again, vascular or not vascular, it's going to be these class. It's going to be this class of plants. Or if it is in this environment, maybe in this phylum, this class of plants. When you're going down, again, to the order and the family, this is, again, well, what are we seeing here? What's the fruit look like? Or what's the stems look like? Or what are the leaf shapes? Are they this big or this small? If you can look at the pollen right now, or the root structure, is it a tuber, is it a rhizome, are there holes in it or not? You'll see, again, this thing that will get you closer to the simple names of the houseplants that we're generally knowing. Again, these things don't always relate to the common name, because that's a whole, again, ballpark of
you
give to just classify a plant. And again, we all get comfortable with it. Somebody made the name, it stuck, and everybody loved it. But this Latin here, again, it gets us to that area of what we're familiar with, which may be pilea or philodendron or marantas or aloes, the bananas, any of them, the mooses, any of them. So those big things are family that we are looking at. The big, small thing are the family, the genus, and the species. You can still get a lot from these other ones. That, I think, is usually more for the budding botanist versus the happy horticulturalist who's, you know, again, growing these beautiful plants.
I love that. Yeah, I always get confused which one is the smaller one, the genus versus the species. But S, species starts with S and S is small. So that's how I remember it now. The species is like the last name of the plant, and that's the most unique identifier for the plant. So when we're looking at a plant, what are we looking at in order to identify it for ourselves?
So when we're looking at plants, again, that identification, you want to think of these characteristics. And these characteristics are sometimes the big showy things we appreciate in a plant, like the variegation in a Thai constellation, right? We love these different shades of pink in our pink philodendrons or pink princess philodendrons. We adore that. But some of these characteristics may be something that you, again, would not look at. How is that leaf shape? What is the exact leaf shape? Not just it's a leaf. That's simple. Everybody can say that, right? But when you actually perceive that leaf, if you were to draw it freehand, what does that leaf look like? How does the margins or that edge of that leaf look? How long is the petiole, if there one there at all? A bunch of other big, sometimes complicated and confusing scientific words, botanical words, whether something is glabrous or whether it's hirsute, whether it's ovate or lanceolate or slightly pinnate, and all of these other words in between. What exactly is a peduncle? It's some type of flower. It's a flower shape and morphology. But when you start to get into that nitty gritty, you start to realize that someone, people from way back when, took the time to say, every little bit of this plant, I'm going to deconstruct. Again, not just these gorgeous, showy leaves, but I want to really look at that leaf and say, if I had to describe this to a person who has never seen this plant before, and they knew what these words meant, they can draw this or find it in the street. Or if I had to describe this to a person who was visually impaired, in their mind's eye, they would get an image of this. They would be able to say, I can see this image in my head as if you showed it to me.
I think it's interesting with houseplants too, because to my understanding, a big part of plant identification comes down to the flowers. Mm-hmm. And so many of our tropical foliage plants don't bloom indoors. So we have to become kind of super sleuths and figure out other ways to identify these foliage plants that are not going to flower for us indoors, like our birds of paradise and our monsteras that would flower outdoors in their native environment, but they're not flowering indoors for us.
They're not. You're right. We do have to be Cagney and Lacey. We have to be Angela Lansbury in them.
Totally. So with looking at our houseplants, what are some general things that we are looking at? I know you mentioned leaves. We talked about flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into leaf identification.
Let's do it.
Where do we even start?
Where do you start? So when you look at a leaf, the first thing you do is the most easiest way to identify something is to know how to describe it.
Okay.
Is to know how to reference it, right? Because if I know the word, then I can know what to say. So when you go into a plant shop in general and you say, hey, I want a plant, and the person says, oh, what you're looking for, and you're having to describe it to them, you can describe to them a green long plant, but what are you really talking about? Are you talking about an ivy? Are you talking about a pothos, a philodendron, a scedampus? What are you referencing? Is it a Hoya? What are you saying is this green long plant? But once you know the actual word, it all makes sense, right? In that mm-hmm. same way, go to Auntie Google, as my friend Cola would say, mm-hmm. and you look up these leaf shaped diagram. So in that way, you could say it'll have a picture of a leaf looking crenate or toothed. It's kind of like these ridges or teeth looking fledges on the outside of it, or it's palmate. The leaf looks like the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. The name even says it, palmate, right? When you have that definition and terminology, again, that gives you the ability to say, okay, this leaf of this banana plant was a little ovate and lanceolate. It was a little oval looking. Lanceolate, it was kind of like a lance. It was kind of long and slender, okay? And that gives you the ability to communicate with someone, again, what does this look like? Or if you know where the leaves are placed on the stem, if the leaves are placed opposite sides of each other, the petioles are literally coming out such as that, or if they're kind of out alternate where one comes out here, one comes out there, and they're alternating, how does those leaves look? Are there any leaves on this? What is the stem holding? What color is that stem? When you are able to use really these magical adjectives, these magical, difficult sounding adjectives, you will be able to open up that door when it comes to looking at your leaves. Like you said, these plants generally are not going to bloom inside for, especially your first year gardener, your first year houseplant enthusiast. So you look at that leaf and be able to describe it. And even if you go to, again, your typical garden shop, they may not know these terms. But if you know, okay, the leaf was shaped like an arrow, that general thing itself is like, oh, it's probably XYZ, or it was shaped like a heart. That simplicity in itself already brings to mind, in our own mind, I know in mine, and I'm sure in yours, I'm going to go ahead and say in yours too, it's bringing in mind few plants already when you're like, okay, a heart-shaped leaf, I can think of this type of Hoya or this type of philodendron or any of these other beautiful plants we know and love. It helps us to have communication with more than just saying a name that may bring nothing to nobody's mind.
Something I talk about so much is just taking a moment of screen-free time with your plants, like noticing the leaves, noticing the patterns on the leaves, like just having a zen moment with your plants. And when you arm yourself with leaf identification words, if you know what to look for, that's also so awesome to prompt yourself to have those just screen-free moments and ask yourself, okay, how are these leaves growing? What is the shape of the leaf? Like from an identification standpoint, it's really interesting, exactly. But also from a mindfulness practice, it's kind of interesting.
It is. It is very much so. I think when we are talking about that observation of your plants, you're spending time with your plants and you're getting to know them. Whenever I am at a plant shop and I'm trying to figure out a plant, what is this? You know, is it an aloe? Is it a Hothwortia? What is this thing? Then I will use all of my senses except for taste, but I may smell stuff. I may put my hands all over. I will put my hands all over all plants. If you ever go plant shopping with me, Maria, just know I am the person that takes the plant out of the pot all the way. I look at everything, but I touch all over and I experience it. That way I can know, okay, I can again further describe it to you. I have botanical language, but I can further describe it to you. These are the punch list that makes this. It felt like this. It smelt like that. It looked like this. And again, I don't use taste for the indoor, but it went all of that. And that way you can really notice something else about your plants that you didn't just figure out.
Yeah. And so with botanical nomenclature this topic we're discussing, I think I pronounced that
binomial,
correctly.
Uh-huh.
Binomial nomenclature, but is with leaf shape, is also the texture of the leaf important? Like a peperomia has much more of a thicker, waxier leaf than a pothos that has a thinner leaf. Is that part of the identification process as well?
That is. When these scientists were going out to, again, tell us about these plants, especially the newer generation, those who were born, you know, after 95 or even in the 2000s, those youth, those young adults have lived with the internet being this ever-growing, quicker thing, this access to all of the information in the world. They've lived with that for a long time. And granted, as a child of the 90s, I too had the internet, but I remember using Dewey Decimal and his beautiful system to find different things in a card catalog. And just understanding Jeeves being this magical internet service that I thought would never disappear. Looks like I was wrong. And all of these other things. But there's a beautiful ability we have to communicate, to share ideas with each other now than when we had, again, in the 90s, that versus even the 60s and the 80s. So when we think about these people who are finding these plants and quote unquote discovering these plants, in the 1800s or the 1700s and even the 1900s, they had to literally use everything in their power to tell you what this plant was. It was here. It looked like this. It felt like this. I broke this stem and it smelled like this. The thistles are this long. They would literally use every factor of description to say, I give to you an example of this plant. Some of them seemed like all of them were just expert artists, or they would bring a piece of it back. But if they couldn't, they still had to be able to explain to people, like, this is what it is. We now, you know, I see a plant that I want. I don't know what it is. I can take a picture of it and use so many things to look it up. Or all of my friends, I can ask them. I know so many intelligent people who can tell me what a species is in 30 seconds or less. But we didn't have that back then. So you had to literally rub yourself on these plants. Rub a plant on yourself today. Don't let it be a cactus.
Let it be a nice fuzzy calanchoe or something. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Rub that mother of thousands on you. And you feel it and you say, you know, you might, again, you rub on a stem of a plant. You might not have noticed, like, this is hairy. This is a little hairy. It's a little tingly.
Or like a mother of thousands has spikes on it, thorns on its stem.
Exactly. And again, unless you're accidentally getting stabbed one day, you're like, oh my God, how did I not see this here? But we all can see the cacti. We know them and we can say that's thorny. So you have to think about sense bearing experience you can give to people.
Yeah, I love that. My fiance and I both have scratches on our bodies from our lime tree, which has thorns.
Oh, yes. The citrus family. They are terrible thorn people.
Yeah, we won't dive into this. But another thing that I learned in my intro to plant science class was thorns are actually not thorns. They're either a thorn, a prickle. There's three different types of spiky things that can be on the spine of a plant. I thought that was really interesting. But we don't have to dive.
You are right. You're right.
Wait. People can go back and listen to our intro to plant science episode to learn more about
that. Thank you, Espoma Organics, for supporting today's episode. Espoma Organics is a family-owned and operated company dedicating to make safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. Plant friends, we all know I love their liquid fertilizers, especially the houseplant specific one that I use all the time, and their potting mixes. But did you know that Espoma has an amazing seed starting mix? If you're interested in starting seeds after listening to the seed starting content I've made recently, or you're just looking to up level your outdoor gardening game, definitely check out their seed starting mix. And if you're sticking to your indoor game, I love their general potting mix mixed with a little perlite for most of my houseplants. And I love using their cactus mix on my succulents and Limey the lime tree. To learn more about their amazing organic indoor and and outdoor products for all of us plant people, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link in the show notes to go to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon storefront, where I've curated and selected all my favorites for you. Thanks again, Espoma. So very thankful to Territorial Seed Company for sponsoring today's episode. Plant friends, if you are interested in having a garden this year, no matter what the scale, if it's one or two containers on a balcony or an epic farm that you're planning, you've got to check out Territorial Seed Company for your seeds, plants, and seed starting education. Territorial Seed Company prides itself on selecting and growing seeds for the best tasting, best producing, highest quality vegetables, flowers, and herbs available. They are an independent, family-owned business that has been in operation since 1979, and they see themselves as farmers and gardeners just like us, their customers, and work tirelessly to ensure the highest quality seeds and plants for us to grow. I am beyond excited to be using Territorial Seed Company for my garden this year, and I'm constantly blown away by the insane variety they had. The other day I was looking for micro dwarf tomatoes and typed in cherry tomatoes into their website and was like blown away with how many different tomato types that they have. They seriously have everything you could need. And to be honest with you, because this is my first outdoor garden, I really don't want to mess around with like weird old seed packets or companies that, you know, I can't trust. And I'm excited that their seeds are high quality, that they have a ton of educational resources on their website, including the garden planner that I'm using, and lots of free growing guides as well. Territorial Seed Company produces 25% of the seed varieties that they sell, so their seeds are naturally going to be high quality, tested, and hardier than others. They've truly got options for every gardener, whether it's seeds that you want to start yourself, pre-grown plants to pop right into containers, or even their no-brainer urban container collection, which has literally everything you need to just set it up and grow. So check out the amazing variety of seeds, plants, garden planners, and more at territorialseed.com and use code BLOOM10 at checkout for 10% off your first order. Once again, that's BLOOM10 at territorialseed.com for 10% off. Thanks again, Territorial Seed Company. Okay, back on track, flower identification. Anything we should know about flower identification in regards to houseplants?
So a flower is a reproductive organ. Like some of us, we know that, but it's just something to remember. And that genitalia is different for every species and really across the genii. So once you look, I shouldn't say genii, really across the families. So different plant families for the most part will have different shaped flowers. Now there's different things that will happen where somebody, two different, not related families will have similar flower types, or a species here and a species there will have similar flower types. It just happens, but all of them are different. And again, being able to describe those differences really is more than just the flower morphology, because you need to know that. You need to know what a stamen is and what an anther is and all of that stuff. But you would also have to be able to know really what type of flower this is. We, as regular day people, we see a plant, we see a flower, and we say flower. And when we think of a plant's flower, we've seen a lot of different types. I'm sure we've eaten some, but there's a certain simple idea that we all have within our brain. When it comes to looking at these flowers on a truly massive scale, you want to be able to, again, describe what it looks like. The plants in the arum family, again, your peace lilies, your Amorphophallus, your Monasteras, your philodendrons, they all have these flowers that have a hood over them. I call it a spated.
Yeah.
And that's what really lets them all vibe and work together. When it comes to some outdoor plants or even indoor plants like bananas, their flowers look just ornamental and amazing. Or the night blooming cirrus has these delicate flowers on a long stem that are heavily fragrant. And that's, again, where smell will come in handy. You look at these flowers and you see, what do they look like? Again, get those adjectives. Now, here's where you also need to know time. Because again, one of those plants I just named, night blooming cirrus, blooms at night. Or if you lock it in a dark room for a couple of hours and it's about to bloom, then you can trick it and then it'll be like, ah, it's night. But they bloom at night. So if you have a house where you love natural sunlight, then you have to remember, okay, well, when did this bloom? Did this bloom even have a smell? Is it one of those fancy orchids that is fragrant? And again, be able to describe that flower. Even if you just know the color and the general shape, it looks like X, Y, Z, or you could draw it on paper. That opens the door to know what your plant is. But again, since some of us don't get flowers on our indoor plants, Some people do, and I'm not bitter when I see those pictures. I just report them to Instagram as spam. But I think, again, leaves are usually your sure bet. But if you are lucky enough to get a flower, definitely snap a picture of it, like all around it, or a video, so people can really get a 3D feel of it. And then, again, notate, what does that flower look like? Is the stamen super high or super low? Stuff like that.
Well, also it makes me think of peperomia don't actually have their quote unquote flower is an inflorescence, which doesn't look like a flower at all. It confused me so much when my first one bloomed. I don't even know if you call it bloom, but their inflorescence look like just spikes that stick right out of the peperomia. And you look at it and you're like, what the heck is this? And then, oh, it's happy. It's doing well. Like it threw off inflorescence, right? And then my other thought that came up listening to you is Hoyas have, even though I think Hoyas have gorgeous leaves, their flowers, they're nicknamed the wax plant because most Hoya flowers have that waxy, they look like they're almost cut from wax. Like Hoyas have a very particular looking flower as well.
That's amazing. I've never had a Hoya, so I can't wait to get that and try it maybe.
I know, me too. I just did an Hoya episode and I got so turned on to Hoyas. I'm like Googling them every day, but I'm moving so I can't get any yet. But I'm like really excited about it.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about other house plants that flower that might be interesting to talk about. I mean, I've got my Christmas cactus right next to me that I'm waiting to flower very soon.
I can't even wait. That's exciting.
And those come in all sorts of beautiful colors and bloom at like obviously certain times of year.
Most of our houseplants that we have can flower. So I have in here bananas. I have in here a couple of plants that name I forgot. I feel like they flower. Aloes flower. Mm-hmm. Like aloes do. I have an alocasia in here. Actually, that's a colocasia. Maybe it's both. I have alocasias and or colocasias in here. Maybe one or the other, maybe both. And let's see what's behind me.
Tillandsia, air plants.
Air plants, they do flower. Let's see. I don't have anything else that's near me that would obviously flower. There's another alocasia here and some more philodendrons and such. But yeah, there's a lot of them that do flower. They do reproduce in this way. Because reproduction is just what life is all about in this kingdom, this planty world. So when you are lucky enough to get a flower, really just notate it. Like, I'm still waiting to get a night blooming cirrus, but I know that's way different than my colocasia flowers, because especially the gigantea I have outside, that's a whole different ballpark.
Yeah. Or Sansevieria, snake plant flowers are like so rare, but also like disappointing. Alien. They're kind of a simple, like they're not like a showy flower at all. Like I think the leaves are much prettier than the flower.
See, I think they're actually decent because, you know, unless I'm mixing up them and aloe, because it's just this odd alien looking thing.
It is very alien looking.
To see this flower just pop up and it's like, oh, okay, great. That's beautiful. So I guess just the nerd in me.
Totally. So here's a question. A little leaf, a little flower. We'll put resources in the show notes to help people if they want to dive deeper on understanding the different terms and the different ways they're categorized. Let's talk about stems, because stems, I feel like, are a little confusing with houseplants. Okay. We've got the stems of vining plants that are straightforward. Uh-huh. You know, the leaves grow off of as they tumble down to the ground. Then we've got long stems like alocasias and philodendrons that hold these massive leaves that are amazing. And then also we have like snake plants. Like, do they even have stems? Because they look like to me that they're all leaf. So what identifying factors can we kind of play with understanding houseplants in regarding stems?
So a stem is termed in a very simple way as this. You have roots at the bottom of it, and there's leaves that are on kind of the axis or along the sides of that thing. So when we branch out to learn a little bit more about these plant terms and the physiology, you see what I did there, branch out. When we branch out to that thing, it's about, I see, I knew you would get it. I really thought hard about that one. I'm proud.
I love it.
So when we are doing that thing, we have to consider what is the stem and then what is a petiole? What is the part connecting that leaf to the stem, if that is even, you know, apparent? So when we think of, for example, this alocasia maharini here I got.
Oh, so pretty.
Thank you. I got it from the plant proper. They had these bad boys on style and these thick leaves too. But anywho, these beautiful plants here, you have the base here. And underneath this base is a tuber. Is that a tuber or a rhizome? I think it's a tuber with this bad boy. With a snake plant, I have a rhizome. That rhizome is an underground stem. It's kind of a stem that runs along the edge. And you come up and you see those leaves sticking up and holding. So leaves are like that. My hands are kind of cupped, sliding into each other. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a bad Chris Rock impersonation. And that is where that stem comes up from. I think plants are so diverse. I know plants are so diverse and their shapes and how they grow are so diverse. Just like us, we sometimes don't see that thing that we're typically looking for. Because again, the snake plant, the stem is there. It's just underground.
Okay. So everybody's got a stem. It just shows up differently.
Exactly.
So what houseplants don't look alike, but are actually closely related?
Okay. So this is all, when we think about what looks like and what doesn't, again, botanical awareness, knowing these things, growing these plants. And again, even if you're studying dendrology and morphology, taxonomy, all that stuff, you'll see things and you're like, oh, of course these are related. But these to me, my personal opinion, don't inbox me, were the ones I didn't think seemed that like. So caladiums, philodendron, anthuriums. All related.
Philodendron, caladiums, and anthuriums are all related.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess they look similar, sort of, because some of them all have big leaves.
An arrow leaf. And the anthuriums, when I seen it, so when we look at the leaf, because remember, we talked about this earlier, and this is where it's just hitting me now. So when I look at this alocasia, which is also in that family, so alocasia, mm-hmm. colocasia, all of them, I only usually think of the leaves of all these plants.
Yeah.
The majority of them, because all that we see are these leaves. Now, when I grow this outside and I grow the other things outside, I get that giant flower, which is reminiscent of the anthurium, the lipstick plant. When I look at that flower and it's, again, got that little dress on the back of it, you got a kind of a spadix there. It just like, duh, this is in the arrow family because this is their flower, like the peace lily. It's just a little relaxed.
Peace lily. So the peace lily is also related to those plants.
Mm-hmm.
So a spadix, for people who don't know, is a type of flower where it's like kind of got a rod and then kind of like a, you said, like a dress around it. Like it's got like a cape almost. And
exactly.
Any peace lily, if you've ever seen a peace lily flower or like your store-bought anthuriums that have like the red flowers that have like a hood, that's what a spadix is.
Yes, the hood covering that inflorescence.
Okay, what about plants that look similar but are not related?
Okay, beautiful. Again, this is something I looked up because I was like, I feel like these are related because they looked alike to me.
Mm-hmm.
Pilea and peperomia. There's some pilea and peperomia that I feel like are just like, is this not a pep? Like, and I've seen some in a store. They had them on sale. It was like the world's most popular houseplant. I was like, that's funny. I don't have it. Y'all mm-hmm. are lying. I look at the pictures on Instagram. Nobody has this. But I was like, that looks like just a fancy peperomia. But they're not related.
And it's even more confusing because it's called Pilea peperomioides. I think because it looks like a peperomia. But yeah.
Yes.
But they're not related. And also another plant that looks like Pilea peperomioides but is not is mm-hmm. the Begonia ruby red. Have you seen that plant?
I have the begonia. Hopefully Auntie Google can bless me.
It's a begonia, but it has that pancake green leaf. But then it has a red dot in the middle and the stems are red.
Wow. That is amazing.
I know. I love it.
That almost looks like, it's not a houseplant though. You could do it as a houseplant. I think it's Chinese money plant. It's like Chinese water plant. It's basically like a little disc. I remember the genus, but I'm not going to pronounce it because I know I'm going to kill it.
Yeah. Kind of like a nasturtium.
Yes. It's something like that. And it's a beautiful plant. They grow back on the coast where I'm from.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners, Danny, wants to know, what's the easiest way to tell apart Maranta, Calathea, Synanthe, if that's how you pronounce it, and Stromanthe? Because those are all, I believe, well, I know that Stromanthe, Calathea, and Maranta, at least, are all Marantaceae.
They are.
But how do you tell those puppies apart?
So I only did the first three because I actually forgot to Google the last one in my research. So we're just going to go ahead and start. So Marantas are your prayer plants. Now, they're all in the same genus, which is named after it. It's the namesake, right? But it is the prayer plants. Those are the plants. The leaves move up and down in a praying habit. You know, people all love them, except for me because they die here. And they have the nyctinansy where, again, the leaves go up during the day and down during the night. So actually, I have it backwards. Down during the day, up during the night, folding up. So they are a plant that is more like a ground cover. They are more trailing in that ground cover fashion.
Synanthiar?
That's Marantha.
Oh, Marantha are more trailing.
Yes.
Okay.
So clumps in the, they're clumping plants. So trailing, but they're growing in a clump.
Okay.
Okay. So bingo bongo, Calatheas are a little more pleated, their leaves are. So their leaves look similar, but for the most part, they're a little ruffled or folded, mm-hmm. not into origami or anything like that, but just little waves or ridges or angled things. Leaves can be ovate or oval shaped. That ovate, again, kind of relates to looking like an egg in a two-dimensional thing. Or the leaves can be lance shaped, like rattlesnake Calathea, mm-hmm. which is, again, another plant that is so beautiful. And one day I will grow and not kill. And in Tenanthe, they also have those ovate or lance-shaped leaf, but the leaves are up on stalks and kind of pointing up like an umbrella. So you start to see, they all kind of look like this same general color scheme, but this one grows in a clump. That's the Marantha. The leaves actually are the ones we see moving. You know, people do the little videos and they see them drastically moving during the day. Like those mm-hmm. are the Marantha. The Calatheas are a little different. They may have some of that same thing, but their leaves may be a little more lanceolate, kind of like a pin or ovate.
And kind of tougher, right? Like, I feel like Calathea rattlesnake is a perfect example that, like, the leaves are definitely a little bit wavy on the edges, just like you said. And the plant, like, the leaf is a little, maybe tougher isn't the word, but, like, stronger? You know what I mean?
I mean, tougher sounds good to me. See,
yeah,
here's
right?
the thing with these plants. I've had all of these family within places I've lived. And all of this family that I had is dead. They all left me very early on in my plant career, especially the Tenanthe. I loved them, but I did not know what I was doing years ago, 10 so years ago. I haven't touched them as much as I would like to. Mm-hmm. But if that's something you observed, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, that shows me and the viewers, like she was able to pull that up because she gets down with her plants.
Well, I try. I mean, I observed it. Who knows if it's right or not? Another thing I observed about my Synanthe, which I thought was a Marantha for the first two mm-hmm. and a half years that I owned it. Then I posted it on Instagram and said, look at my beautiful Marantha. And someone was like, that's not a Marantha, that's a Synanthe. And I was like, okay,
that's what they do.
So something that's interesting about that plant that I've noticed is I got it as a cutting and it grows. It almost grows pups. Like it doesn't grow longer. It's not a pup, but it's
a clonal community. Like it's spreading runners.
Yeah.
And you can definitely call them pups. Like that is something aloes do, I believe. What are those things? Pineapples. I think they eventually do that too, where you get a pineapple the first year and then the next year that plant will give you a couple other little plants in front of it and kind of clone out that way.
Yeah. It's been super interesting to watch the plant grow. Because it's definitely different than my Marantha, which is one big clump and the leaves, it just keeps growing more, like it keeps trailing.
Yeah, I love those things.
But I've commonly misunderstood those two plants. Our last listener questions for you, you know, you talk about if we have a question, like take it to Auntie Google and figure it out. So what are your like trusted resources that you go to figure these things out? If you're wondering Wigtii versus Maculata, or I don't know what the name of this plant is, where do you go to do further research?
So typically the first thing I do is hit up like iNaturalist or Picture This. And those are two free apps where you can basically snap a photo of a plant. You let it know your location and everything, and it can tell you based on where you are and, you know, I guess little identification video, whatever the magic is they use to let this thing identify a plant. It can say, hey, it is this plant. And the thing I love about iNaturalist specifically is it is a community-based app. So granted, like there's people that run it, but if I happen to look and see like what other things were seen in this area that you were in, I could say, oh, well, this person didn't know that this was an acorn or this was this or this was that. So it's beautiful. For houseplants, it will also know what those are. But if you're looking for more than just a general genus, then again, the Google image search or picture this, I think people have used that. But I've also seen people literally crowdsourcing information. There are so many identification groups and plant groups across all forms of social media that it is so easy sometimes to be able to post a picture and let the people tell you, hey, this is this plant. And granted, you know, some of these groups, I sit and I watch people say the wrong things and 30 people just agree. And, you know, somebody just Googled real quick what they thought it was. And they said, this is it, because I did 10 minutes of Google. And again, I'm like, well, that color isn't the same. And the leaf shape isn't the same, which is, again, you know, me just looking. But I think you can still get such a good answer. Like a real good friend of mine, Ashley, here in the Raleigh-Durham area, I can hit her up and be like, hey, what cultivar is this? And I feel like before I even push send, she's came back with an answer.
Right.
And it's the right one. I can then like be like, ah, this is it. Thank you. So Google and the apps are your friends, but have a good person.
And the community.
Corner.
I see it in my Facebook group all the time. People posting pictures of their plants saying, hey, I just got this as a rescue plant. I don't know what it is. And five other plant friends commenting. And Instagram is also a fabulous tool for that.
It is.
I'm currently trying out the app Steward Home. It's a paid app and they've given me a free trial.
Oh, yeah, good.
And they have a plant doctor. They have botanists on call that you actually email your pictures to, and they have a botanist ID it for you, which is pretty cool, but it's a paid subscription. This is so interesting. I think there's a lot left to learn after this conversation. I think it will leave a lot of us inspired to continue getting curious and learning more. So we'll put some resources together in the show notes for people who want to go next level and look at all of the things that we kind of skimmed the surface on, because how can you dive so deep into a topic in only 40 minutes?
You can't.
If people want to follow you and learn more from you, where can they find you?
So I am generally on Instagram and I am at The Chocolate Botanist. You will find me there. Again, I am Derek the Crazy Botanist, but that handle I have is The Chocolate Botanist. You can also look up me on Facebook, The Crazy Botanist. Please subscribe to me on YouTube. I do have some videos there, and I'll be working more there as we come into the new year. Those are where you can find me. That's where you can hit me up at.
And you're launching a new TV show on YouTube, yes?
Yes, I have been desiring and reflecting to do more with scientific communication. I really love to have conversations like this where I can dive into the science and stretch myself and challenge myself. But I also love just to be able to give information to someone on a scale where anybody can understand it. Science should not be difficult or a rite of passage that only some can understand. It should be something that is accessible and available for all people, regardless of your level of knowledge. If you're willing to learn, it should be in something that is just digestible, so you can at least have a decent conversation. So this is definitely going to be something to feed into that and to just, you know, show off my creativity.
I love it. Well, the links for all of those things will be in the show notes. Everyone go give Derek a follow. And Derek, thank you so much for nerding out with me today. And I hope we nerd out again sometime soon.
I hope so too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Derek, for stopping by Bloom and Grow Radio. His links are in the show notes in case you want to go give him a follow and see what he's up to. Derek was also kind enough to give me this university document that breaks down a lot of the topics that we discussed. So we started talking about leaf shape and flower ID, and obviously we couldn't dive too deep into any of those topics. So there's a link in the show notes to this really cool document that breaks down all of the different leaf shapes and all of the different flower parts. If you want to kind of take a deeper dive into understanding and being able to describe plants in the way Derek was talking about. Also, we got so many great listener questions, and I wanted to follow up on one from a Patreon supporter plant friend, Cece Carson. She wrote in, is my polka dot angel leaf begonia automatically a Wigtii, Wigtii, or are there other polka dots? And plant friends, this stumped me. I had to ask a few different people, including Derek. We were a little stumped. I wrote a couple of other botanists and horticulturalists. They were a little stumped because this is a really tricky kind of gray area in begonia identification. So I ended up reaching out to the American Begonia Society. You can find them at begonias.org.
Holy moly, plant friends. If you are interested in begonias, you must go check out that website. It's amazing. I wrote them with this question and I heard back from this lovely guy, Butch, who is an epic begonia lover. Oh my God, he has so many. And I asked him the same question and this was his response. There are a lot of polka dot cane begonias. Begonia maculata is a large polka dotted cane begonia, and it's probably the parent of any large polka dotted canes. There are other species with smaller dots and some with streaks and some with just plain leaves. The one that we all know and love, which is the kind of the traditional angel wing style with the large pink dots, is Begonia maculata wichtii. But there are many other varieties and cultivar hybrids that have some with small dots. One that I have is likely called Coralina de Lucerna. I'll put a picture of it in the show notes. But I thought that was interesting, so I responded to him saying, okay, so for me to understand, it sounds like all polka dot begonias are cane begonias. And then he said, no, it gets even more confusing. All polka dot begonias are not canes. Most are, but there are some rhizomatous begonias that have dots too. So there are a lot of unidentified varieties of these speckled begonias. The one that we all know and love is the Begonia maculata wichtii, but there's some gray area here. So if you have more questions about begonias, or if you're curious about begonia identification, I can't recommend begonias.org enough. They are the American Begonia Society. Thank you to Butch, who took so much time to clarify these things and sent me a lot of cool pictures, some that I'll put in the show notes for you guys as well. Also, I've been taking a indoor plant care class that Leslie Halleck is teaching at UCLA Extension online, which has been amazing. And we've gotten some pretty amazing plant ID resources from her class. So I'm going to include a few of the websites that I've really enjoyed going to find proper plant names and references as well. So this is kind of a jumping off episode. It's pick your own adventure after now. You can just kind of move forward and try and notice what direction your leaves grow. So now it's a choose your own adventure. You can just kind of digest the information we talked about in today's episode and just move forward and live your planty life. You can check out begonias.org. You can check out the document that Derek gave that has all of the different leaf shapes, and you can kind of drill yourself and learn those names, or you can poke around the links that I've also provided in the show notes. So just keep blooming and growing your information. And I just love that this conversation just makes you take pause and realize, okay, if I don't know the name of this plant, it doesn't need to be overwhelming. What does the leaf look like? How does the leaf grow? What's going on with the roots? There's nice practical steps that you can take to try and closer identify what you're working with. And also a wonderful opportunity for all of us to connect with each other. Throw the photo of your unidentified plant on Instagram. I've been doing that on my Instagram account a lot as I've been visiting local nurseries in my new town. So if you guys are interested in following my plant ID journey, definitely follow me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. But yeah, I just appreciate that this episode kind of inspires us all to connect with our plants on a different way and get super curious and observative. So my plant friends, I'm going to close off this episode similar to some of the previous episodes in the season where I introduce you to other podcasts outside of the plant space that I have been enjoying. This podcast, it's called the Sleep Whispers Podcast, is by my new friend Harris, and he has this super clever podcast called Sleep Whispers, and it's actually an ASMR podcast. So trigger warning, if you don't like ASMR, you're not going to like the trailer that we just played. But if you are into ASMR and if you struggle with sleeping, Harris's podcast could be absolutely perfect for you. It's a podcast where he does all sorts of different guided relaxation techniques, guided meditation techniques, all sorts of different ways to lull you to sleep, where he whispers in this very kind of relaxing way with a very high quality mic. And it's that classic ASMR sound. So if you're interested in ASMR or maybe experimenting with different sleep aids, take a listen to this trailer and maybe go check out the podcast. So my plant friends, this is where I leave you until the next episode. I hope you have beautifully planty weeks. You take a minute to observe one of your plants this week and observe something new about the way it grows, whether it's the leaf shape, the leaf structure, the growth pattern, or maybe the roots. Just take a minute, get present with your plants. And until next time, keep blooming and keep growing.
Hello, this is Harris. I have a strange little podcast called Sleep Whispers. I simply whisper, and it helps my listeners to relax and fall asleep. So what do I whisper about? Well, I'll tell you, but I'll do it in a whisper. I read bedtime stories, poems, guided meditations, fun trivia questions, and even curious Wikipedia articles about history, science, and pop culture. If you find this relaxing, then just search for Sleep Whispers in your podcast app. Thanks.
Plant Friend, thank you for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're there subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section and leave us a review? It would be tremendously helpful for the show, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more planty content or ways to help and support the show or engage with our community, we've got a ton of options for you. So first, there's the free Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test. It is a super fun 3-minute test that I made for you that pairs you with your plant parent personality profile, where you'll learn your planty strengths and weaknesses and get a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you. The test lives at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality, and you have to let me know what your results are on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. If you're interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio, consider becoming a Patreon plant friend of the show. Patreon plant friends are members of the community who support the show monetarily on a monthly basis for as little as $4 a month, and these magical humans help support the show and bring our content to as many planty eyes and ears as possible. Once you join, you'll also get the secret password to our Facebook group, which I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. We have a lot of fun over there. You can become a Patreon plant friend at patreon.com/bloomandgrowradio. And of course, you can also just join our newsletter that I like to call the Garden Club. When you join our Garden Club, you'll receive a free download of the exclusive Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print, which is so adorable. And I'll slide into your inboxes, usually only around twice a month, with plant care tips, recent episodes, and announcements. You can join at bloomandgrowradio.com/community. And for anything else, plant friends, I'm here for you. So feel free to drop me a line when you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe even if you're a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. Thanks again for listening. It is my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will will pop up. So you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.